This is CliffCentral.com.
Good afternoon. The time is 4 minutes past three. My name is Rosie Mutene, aka the Afro-Yiddish Princess. Welcome to my show called Pan-African Connect, where we connect with people from across the continent, whether it's food, travel, entertainment, tradition, culture, anything that is beautiful and powerful that is happening on the African continent, we're going to talk about it. And today we're focusing on African women in film. But before we get into that, of course, if you want to give us a call or tweet us, we're on Twitter under cliffcentral.com, or of course PrincessRTM, which is my Twitter handle. But first, before we get into our interview, we got to listen to this.
This is cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to the show. The time is 7 minutes past three. If you want to call in, the number is 0861-555-189. Otherwise on Twitter at CliffCentral.com, or of course Princess RTM. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about African women in film. And in studio, I have my good friend, Abida Ayubo.
Hello, Rosie.
How are you, my darling?
I'm good. How are you?
For those listeners out there, if you want to remember, way back in the day when Abida and I were both in Generations and she played with Lerato, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know. I hate when people talk about the Generations part. But I mean, that's where it all began for most of us. But what have you been doing up until now since then? Because people seem to think if you're not in Generations, yeah, you don't have a
yes.
career.
My usual response to that is change the channel. But anyway, I still did a lot more soap. I did a bit of Isidingo for a while.
Yeah.
And then I kind of decided I wanted to keep it more on the international film level. I just want to be able to do a lot of different things and not be stuck in one place.
Yeah.
There's been quite a few movies.
That's such a powerful statement that you made, because a lot of people think, well, you know, I've got this job. I'm hating my career. I hate what I'm doing in the job. But yeah. I better just stay in it because, well, you know, it's a steady income coming in. You know, I mean, what advice would you say to young actresses out there who know that? I mean, we realized at the point when it was our time was up in Generations, it was like we did what we needed to do, but the passion wasn't there anymore.
Yes, I think people get into it for different reasons.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Some people want more security. Some people like being famous. Yeah. It's a matter of you figuring out what it is you're there for.
Yeah.
And I realized I wanted to do different things.
Yeah.
I want to act. I've always wanted to act. It's still my first love, and that's what I'm always chasing.
Yeah.
But we know this industry is crazy.
Yeah.
You need to do different things if you want to survive, and you just need to find what you can do.
Yeah.
So for the most part, it's been voiceovers. I've been doing voiceovers for over 10 years, and that is essentially my bread and butter.
Yeah.
I've recently started writing,
mm-hmm.
which is the scariest thing I have ever done in my life. It will show you who you are. It will reveal your issues to you that you didn't even know you had.
And especially the ones that you knew that you did have and you had to
face
them.
And it's all laid out in front of you and you can't deny who you are. It's amazing in that way. So that's something
What pushed you into that, into writing?
It was just I needed a change.
Yeah.
Turning 40 will light a fire under your bum like nothing else. Let's put it that way.
That's exactly what
happened. I turned 40 and I was like, what have you done? Mm. What do you have? What do you own? If you want to change things, now's the time. And in the last year, I feel like I've done more than I have in the last 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
That's incredible. And then the first bit of writing that you did,
mm-hmm.
because it's incredibly daunting, as you said. And as it is, artists and actors and performers, we're incredibly critical of ourselves.
Very.
And, you know, people think, well, we're extroverts and we can handle anything. In fact, we're the most, I think, we're emotional creatures and we're the worst.
We are the most insecure people
in the
world.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So what was your first attempt and what were the challenges that you went, besides the loneliness?
My first attempt was to now get into the NFEF. Female filmmakers program,
right?
Which was exactly a year ago.
Yeah.
I was sitting in my bed and had to write this proposal to make a film.
Yeah. And before you go on, for our listeners out there who don't know what NFEF is, it's the National Film and Video Foundation, and it's a great instrumental and a great institution in terms of the film and TV industry, in terms of you can get funding, you can get training, they put a lot of money into our films, put a lot of money into our television and so forth. So this is one of the tiers that they put out.
Yes. So I needed to apply. I was like, this is what I need. It's, you know, it's writing workshops, it's directing workshops, you get to make a film.
Mm.
I sat there and I was like, what are you going to make a film about? I've never actually had to interrogate myself and figure out what was important to me. You know, as an actor, it's always somebody else's vision. And sometimes people don't think you're smart enough. And I think sometimes you start thinking you don't have a voice of your own. So I had to really think about what kind of story I wanted to tell. What made it easier was that at the time, the xenophobic attacks were happening.
Right.
And as a child of mixed African heritage, my mother's half Zambian, half South African, my father's Ghanaian, I wouldn't exist if love didn't occur across boundaries.
Yeah.
So it's very important to me. I love all Africans. I'm all for Kwame Nkrumah's vision, one Africa, you know, one currency, all of that. I am that child.
Yeah.
So I was like, tell a story from what you know.
Yeah, to speak it from the heart.
Speak it from the heart. I was raised as a Ghanaian child who grew up in the former Transkei.
Mm.
So that was where I took it from. So my story was a young Ghanaian girl born and raised in South Africa who falls in love with a Zulu boy from the wrong sides of the tracks. In essence, Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
In a modern context.
Yeah.
So I wrote the proposal, sent it through, and got in and did some workshops. And as we're doing the workshops, I was like, I just felt like I belonged in that room, you know, and I was just like, no.
The workshop, let's break that down. The first workshop that you did, I mean, was it obviously introduction? Did they give you a breakdown of actually script writing, or was it?
Yes, it was intensive. It was maybe like 2 weekends. So it was like 4 days.
Wow.
4 or 5 days of intensive script writing, like all the tricks, all the different points you need, what you basically need in order to get to write a script,
right.
You know? But I mean, it's not easy to teach someone how to write. Mm. They give you the pointers and it's for you to figure out what you're doing. You know, like some people found the writing workshops easier. Some people found the directing easier. It was just a matter of finding where you fit in.
Yeah.
But it made me remember who I was. My father's taught African literature my whole life.
Mm.
He writes it. I just discovered that it was in me.
Mm.
And I think I was just too scared because I had quite a few friends who are in the industry, really brilliant writers in the industry.
Yeah.
And I wanted to measure up, you know?
Yeah.
And that gave me the confidence to do that. So after writing my script, I was like, this ain't bad for a first attempt, you know?
And how long was the script? I mean, was there a parameter? Did you...
Well, we knew the movies had to be about 24, 25 minutes.
Okay.
So my script was actually too long. It came in at 30 pages.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had to cut it down, which made it harder in edit, having to cut it down to 24. But I mean, like, it was a full-on learning process. Nothing went according to plan at any point of it. At any point.
What happened?
I guess it's just general movie making stuff.
Yeah.
You know, what you think the initial vision you have is not going to be the end product. I don't think it is for any filmmaker. And that was something I've had to learn as I go. But I've learned so much. A year later, I am writing for TV and I'm planning my next film, you know?
Wow.
So it's amazing to think how much can actually happen in such a short space of time. And if you put the work in,
but also if you're passionate and you put your head around it,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can basically do anything that you want to.
Definitely.
And also it's also coming at a time where you were more confident to take that step. So although you walked in and you were petrified and you're going to face your fears, you wouldn't have been able to succeed to the level that you did 5 years ago.
I completely agree.
You know?
I completely agree with that. The timing was right. I knew why I was there.
Mm.
I needed it.
Yeah.
And I worked very hard.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I would have done the same if it had just been something that had been easily passed
to
me.
Yeah. Okay, so you did the writer's workshop. What else did you do through LFF within that process?
And then we had a director's workshop. Basically, like, trying to help us... because we still had a pitch. Like, once you wrote your script, there was no guarantee you were going to direct a movie.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yes. So now you still had to pitch to direct your movie.
So they're taking you through all the stages of filmmaking. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So,
yeah. And who were you pitching to? Was it just NFEF or
basically.
Industry players?
It was NFEF and then Blingola, who was the company that was handling the slate.
Right.
And, yeah, so those were the people we were pitching to, and they were assessing our work as we went along.
Yeah,
from beginning to end.
Yeah, so but now directing, have you directed before?
I had directed a 30-second ad about 10 years ago, if you can call that directing.
Yeah,
you know,
I think you're honest.
It was night and day.
Yeah.
But weirdly enough, as crazy as it was, and there's so many more balls in the air with directing, the writing process was still more frightening for me.
Wow. Yeah, but the thing is, it's putting that pen to paper and you got to start telling the story.
Yes.
You know?
I think the directing was easier for me because I know how... I'm a people person.
Yeah.
So if I know, if I get you and you get me, we're going to meet in the middle and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
So I essentially told my all my HODs what I wanted, and I trusted them to interpret it. I wasn't micromanaging, and you know, I kind of gave them the space to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And even though things don't turn out as planned, as I said, everyone, I definitely felt 100% from everybody.
Yeah.
You know? So that made a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did your pitch, and then were there second and third stages that you had to go back, or did you just have to pitch once?
For the directing. Yes. No, it was one pitch and you had to wait to hear if you got to direct your movie, and everyone wanted to direct their own movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was very happy that I could.
And so if they thought that you weren't strong enough to direct it, were they just gonna bring in another filmmaker to
Then another director would step in to bring that your
to
script
tell that
to
story.
Life.
Okay, yes. Okay. Great. And then the process was finding the cast.
You know about this, right? Because I tried.
Yeah, I know.
I so wanted
it. And especially because it's such a beautiful story and you're looking for non-South Africans.
Yes,
I
wanted it to be authentic. I really wanted to have Ghanaians acting as Ghanaians.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. But I was like, okay, move on to the next. Now it just needs to be... find actors who can pull it off, you know? So when it came to crunch time, I picked up the phone and called our good old friend, Aki Nomatosho, and I was like, you need to help me out. And he was there. He was there. It was like happening the next week, and he came and helped me out.
Yeah.
So that was great. So he definitely put a lot of grounding to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then with regard to my lead character, I realized in essence, she didn't have to be Ghanaian.
Yeah.
You know, she was born and bred, because I kind of based on my little sister.
Mm-hmm.
So she's born here. She speaks fluent Xhosa. She's a South African girl.
Yeah.
But you can see she comes from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I was like, as long as Senna looks the part, she is South African.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Yeah.
So I ended up casting a beautiful Zulu actress called Zethu Dlomo, and she delivered beautifully.
But Zethu is an amazing actress.
She's amazing.
She's definitely a future SAFTA winner.
And Dumon Charlie as my male lead, who else could I have wanted?
Yeah.
And they were beautiful together. In fact, they elevated my script.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. I was like, wow, I didn't even mean it like that when I wrote it. And look what they did. Like, you know, watching actors now do their job.
Yeah.
Was beautiful to watch.
Wow.
I have everything turned out in terms of my cast, everything turned out the way it was supposed to.
Yeah.
And I found an amazing Nigerian actress to play the mother. She hadn't acted in over 20 years.
Yeah.
And she was amazing.
Yeah.
She was amazing. So
and you shot it over 5 days?
Yes.
Yeah. And how do you feel now? When is it going to be aired?
We're still in post-production,
okay.
So nothing is set yet, but I'm hoping to send it to as many festivals as possible as well. And just get my name out there as a director, and
Well, I want to talk to you about the type of stories that you do want to be involved in, what stories you want to tell. But I want to introduce Mabatu Kao. How are you,
Hi,
darling?
All right, and you?
Very good. Thank you so much for joining.
Sure.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you've been in the industry also just for what is it, over 10, 15 years now?
Yeah. The other day I got scared when I realized I was about 18.
Wow.
Yeah.
We all
got a while.
Yeah.
We're getting old.
Yeah, we're
getting
old. But we all look good. It's okay.
So good it hurts.
But you're more on the side, I mean, of, you've worked for SABC, you Top TV, so you're more on the production side and stuff. Tell us what your history is.
Well, my history is quite vast, but I've worked a little bit in production and broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also kind of dabbled in producing my own content for SABC.
Yeah.
I've worked as a broadcaster, like you said, Top TV, managing channels. But then I also really love the side of storytelling. So I've worked as, a script editor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as well. What I love
and
about
how
that...
How difficult is it between script writing and script editing? Which is the more... I mean, for our listeners who don't know, it's basically a script editor then goes into a person will write a script, go into the script and then just break it down and I suppose create more of a story around that.
Yeah, that's a really great question, especially in the context of this slate, because I worked as a script editor on these projects.
Oh, wow.
But at the same time, because the production house had the space for one other story, I then had to move my hat to being a writer.
Oh, wow.
So I had, like, being a script editor is a totally different space. You literally take somebody's baby and you help them kind of bring it to life. You ask them the hard questions. You ask them, to look at themselves. Why are they telling the story? What's so important? Why should people care? You know, you delve deep into Senna, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as a script writer, you then also take on being these characters, and constantly they're speaking to you in your head, and you're like telling them to shut up, and they can't shut up. And yeah, so being a script editor and a writer, two very different spaces, but two very special places in my heart.
Yeah,
yeah.
And your history, I mean, have you studied in terms of that, or is it just something that you've picked up along with your experience in the industry?
I initially studied a Bachelor of Journalism and Media Studies at Rhodes.
Okay.
And then, because I also love the business side, I went to do a Master's in Media Management.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of specifically the world of story and writing,
yeah.
I guess I kind of honed my craft through the SABC, because they had a program called Sidiba,
mm-hmm.
where they were working with the NRVF to kind of upskill writers in the industry. So from there, I started to get a better understanding of the process of writing and the craft of writing and editing scripts specifically. Yeah.
Beautiful. Let's talk about your story. What was your story about?
My story is about a young girl who faces a point in her life where she could sacrifice her soul in order to satisfy a boy.
Mm.
So specifically, it's in Kamogeleng, the night of her matric farewell. She's finally asked on a date to the matric farewell by this boy that she's always liked.
Mm.
But of course, her insecurities as a young girl, a young black girl, kind of kick in.
Mm.
So she starts to think she's not good enough, she's ugly, she's too dark, she's not skinny enough for him. So she transforms herself in order to please him.
Mm.
What happens thereafter, she goes down a very dark hole, but you'll have to see the rest of the movie.
Sounds intriguing enough.
Yeah.
And who with the cast? Who did you opt for?
Dineo Lusanga and a girl called Kanye, who kind of acts as her her best friend.
Yeah.
But the male antagonist, other people were like, don't make him an antagonist.
Mm.
Boys also suffer.
Yeah.
Is a young boy called Given, actually, who I worked with when I was producing Chacha.
Okay.
And he's grown now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
They brought some very special things to those characters as well. I mean, there were times where we were sitting and then I'd have written things in the script like, no, boo. And they were like, no, that is not cool. We don't talk like that.
Yeah.
So they brought a lot of that to the script.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the currency.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what, both of you, Abby, you've touched on it, but what were your major challenges in throughout the whole filmmaking process on this specific project?
Well, I guess it's a lot of collaboration. You know, you're not always going to get what you want, and you have such a clear vision of what it is you want to do. You see the scenes in your head, you know? So when something goes wrong and that scene isn't going to play out the way you want as a director, it can sometimes be very hard to let go. So I guess it was learning to just breathe.
Yeah.
And not holding on to everything so tight.
Yeah.
And just trying to trust that no matter what happened, the end result will be fine.
It's trusting that process.
Totally. Yeah. And then just also seeing the transformation from script to production for me was like, wow, you know, what you have in mind and what eventually comes out. Two different things, but two special things as well. You're kind of like, okay, fine. I didn't have a school full of kids, but I got to tell the story.
Yeah. You know? So you made your compromise there.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And then after that, let's talk about the state of African film and the role of women in the industry. But after this.
Keeping it real. On CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to the show. The time is 28 minutes past 3. If you want to call us, it's 0861-555-189. And today we're talking about African women in film. In studio, I have Mabatu Kao, who's been working in the industry for almost two decades, behind the scenes as a writer, producer, broadcaster, you name it. And of course, Abina Ivo, who's, as you well know, actress who's moved into writing and also directed her first piece last year. Mabatu, let's talk about the slate that the NRVF put out and the involvement of Blingola Productions.
Essentially, Blingola worked together with the NRVF to create the slate in as part of a vision to kind of give women a chance, an opportunity in the film industry. We know that it's a very patriarchal industry, very male-driven as well. So essentially, Blingola kind of decided, you know how short films globally actually help open doors for people. So they thought, okay, let's create a slate of films or an opportunity for women writers and directors to do their own product, which they can actually sell and kind of sell themselves with. So that was the vision behind the slate, really. And I guess it goes to your whole thing around talking about women in film on the continent.
Yeah. But what is the state? I mean, you know, we talk about that it's very, very patriarchal. What are the major challenges that we're facing as women filmmakers, whether it's the writing, directing, producing?
Well, I'll speak for myself, for sure. I mean, it's first of all, there's just this very bizarre idea that women only belong in certain roles in the value chain in the film industry.
Yeah.
So, for example, I've seen that if a woman wants to be I'll choose an easy one, like a DOP, a director of photography.
Yeah.
It's often seen as, well, that's a boy's job. You can't do that because it requires caring. It requires being strong. And a lot of the time, women are relegated to being in the office, you know, and that's...
Or wardrobe mistress.
A wardrobe mistress, you know, even those names, like wardrobe mistress is just like, it's ridiculous. So I think we still have a long way to go as women in the industry in general.
Mm.
I mean, we've seen it even in Hollywood, they're facing the same problems, but more specifically, even as black women, I think the journey is much harder. We've got a much further, we've got a much higher hill to climb.
Yeah.
Because I think the idea that we're not capable, we're not creative enough, we're still training, perpetually being trained, you know,
or you have to shadow, or you have to be looked over, you know. And there's so many instances where young production companies are going in, they're given huge amounts of funding, and then sometimes the projects don't even come to fruition, but it's like, oh, well, it was a learning curve for them.
Exactly.
You know, but when it happens to a woman, it was like, well, you should have shadowed, or maybe you weren't ready type of thing.
Maybe you weren't ready. Yeah.
That would happen.
Yeah. I think we've heard that. But I mean, how are we going to break that? I mean, I preach and I will always raise their flag high, and the work that the NFEF do is just simply amazing, you know, and the fact that it's headed up by a woman. But how are we going to change that attitude in terms of other financial institutions and bodies? And also just the perception out there.
Sure. That's such a... I think it's possible. I've got this theory that if something oppresses you, tell it to step out the way because you're on a mission.
Yeah.
So we must stop seeking approval from anything that stops our game.
So
we need to actually just start getting together as women, as collectives, as creatives, and try to actually just push down those barriers and just say, you know, I am actually going to go ahead and do this.
Yeah.
I don't care about what you think of me.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I also find very strange, sorry, just to add,
is please do.
The types of stories that get told about women.
Yeah.
We're either always breaking up, we're damsels in distress.
Yeah.
And if you're a strong woman, in terms of if you create a strong female character, it's like, oh, she's too bossy.
Yeah.
No, she's too opinionated. Yeah. That has to stop. Mm.
But also, it's also that stereotype that, well, if you're powerful, you have to be wearing a power dress. You have to be dressed almost like a man. And a woman walking in a feminine dress just has as much power as somebody carrying a briefcase.
Exactly.
You know, and it's changing those type of perceptions. But the in terms of the stories that are being told, has there been a shift, to have, in your opinion, of the representation of women, and then also, of course, the representation of black women on screens, TV?
Slowly but surely. Like, I'm writing on Umlilo now, I told
you.
And one thing that someone mentioned was that, just talking to an ordinary viewer, they had said that they had felt this was actually the first, one of the characters was the first femme fatale that we'd actually really had on a drama series.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? You know, like a woman going after what she wanted in that sort of way, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was very interesting that we hadn't noticed it, or was it, or at the same time, is it something that should be flagged as important? You know? But those are things that if people are questioning, then we should be responding to.
And reacting to that.
And reacting to.
Mm.
So, I mean, like in terms of the slate, because everything was from a woman's perspective, even when you had to, in terms of sending in your proposals, the story had to be from a woman's perspective.
Right.
So there were 10 strong stories told from a in a woman's voice,
yeah,
which is a great start,
yeah,
if anything.
Yeah.
You know?
But I like what you mentioned before, and it was one of the issues that I had on a production that I was working on, and I inevitably resigned from the production because one of the things that they wrote about the character was that, okay, she's a sexy, powerful woman. Mm. So for me, I read sexy, powerful is that she gets what she wants, but she still looks gorgeous.
Mm.
And in their perception was that, no, well, you need to be half naked. You need to be doing sex scenes, that type of thing.
Mm.
And I was like, in this day and age, are we really still having this argument?
Mm.
You know, and ironically, and very, very sad, the head writer was a female, a black female. And how are we, I mean, what? How are we going to start changing those perceptions? Because their argument was that, well, the audience want this. But at the end of the day, we dictate to the audience and they fall into a trend. Because for so many years, that's what the entertainment industry is about. You know, how do we move towards women believing in standing up and not really taking to that, but also the perception that's going out about our bodies and who we are?
I think, you know, I get so riled up,
mm.
but I think we
get riled up. We're allowed to on the show.
We just need to be brave enough and to actually like, for example, Empire wouldn't have happened if people had said, if people had stuck to the idea that black stories don't sell.
Yeah.
Right. If people had stuck to the idea that black leads don't sell, things like Being Mary Jane wouldn't have been as successful as they are.
Yeah.
Fantasy on TV does not work.
Mm.
Game of Thrones happened. For goodness sake, give yourselves the chance to be brave enough. Have the balls to actually give characters and characterization a different face and a different interpretation.
Yeah.
You know, to stick to the same old thing is ridiculous. This whole idea that audiences want what they want, I get it from a business perspective because you don't want to take the risk to alienate your audience and therefore jeopardize your bottom line. But as well, audiences love seeing something fresh and something new.
Yeah.
Try to innovate.
Thank you. Because also it's you know, it's you got to believe in, and what it was what you were saying about your writing is that you got to believe in what you put into the table, you know, and if you're not going to believe, then you're not going to push, and you're going to fall back into that thing. Well, the audience aren't going to like it, so you have to follow that suit. Is you know, but I mean, what are the other things? What are the stories that we need to tell about ourselves coming from? Let's talk from the South African woman perspective.
I'd love to see a 56-year-old woman living, let's say, in Soweto or Ventersdorp, who is in love with her man and is a sexual, liberated, beautiful mother of five, maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a woman who's kind of like, you know, grown into her own, and she's a mother. She's not the mama figure. You know what I mean? I always say I would love to see Leti's mom on Generations. I mean, on Isidingo, Get It On with Zeb.
Yeah.
I always
yeah.
wanted to see that.
Yeah. But see, that also goes back to that typical stereotype. Well, if it's going to be an elderly black woman, she must be sitting in a taxi, she must be always singing, or she's always eating. You know what I mean?
and a man's probably cheating on her because she's over the hill.
Yeah, you know, and well, that's allowed because, you know, well, this whole thing with the side chick is allowed. So it's, you know what I mean? It's all of these different things. So we need to change that perception. What type of stories would you like to see, Abina?
Gosh, I mean, like for me, the way I've seen myself as the director, I want to be is I want to do all Africa stories. Like I said, I'm a child of all of Africa. So I want, it would definitely be in relation to South Africa because this is my home. This is where I've grown up. So like the next film I'd like to tell would definitely have something to do with Zambia, a Zambian South African story. That's where I was born. I spent a lot of time there. They are amazing stories. I've met amazing performers, directors, producers in Zambia, and I'd love to do some sort of collaboration.
Yeah.
Anything to push the We Are One vibe, that's where my head's at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what were the languages for the NFVF slate? Was it any language across the board?
Essentially, yeah, there was no restriction in terms of language. What came from the writers came from them. Like, there was no sense that said, no, it's got to be a certain language.
Yeah. Because, you see, the reason why I asked that was that I noticed with the national broadcaster, because it's broken up on the different channels, there's specific languages. And although that is incredibly important, but when we were casting for various films, we found really, really strong actors and actresses for certain roles, but then we couldn't give them the roles because of the language issue, because of that barrier. You know, do you see South Africa changing over time and allowing that to to be a little bit lax. I mean, I think it's very, very important to keep the vernacular aspect, but to limit it to per channel, what is your take on that?
I can understand that. Okay, so they, but I just don't think, does that whole thing of this people watching certain channels still apply? I think that's pretty outdated, and they need to just change that. People watch the shows they want to watch.
It
isn't necessarily the show that's in your language.
It's sometimes
the actor that you follow, or just a beautiful story that grabs
you.
Exactly.
And especially if it's shot beautifully.
Yes.
You want to listen to the story.
So I just think, yes, go with the story, and it shouldn't matter what language it's in. I think it's important that if there's a certain language that needs to be spoken, get someone who speaks it properly, because it's important to have that sort of integrity towards our languages. But it shouldn't.
That authenticity is very, very important.
But it shouldn't be a stumbling block almost, you know, to the creativity, I'd say.
Totally agree with that. I think we should. I mean, as it is, we speak in so many different languages when we're chilling, when we're drinking, when we're, you know, in studios.
And the thing is that for me is so beautiful, because that represents a true South African, and rather to South African society. And it's something that I overlooked. And I was actually sitting with my friend Gaetano from Uganda, and he said to me, he goes, but every time this one speaks, it sounds different to this one. And I'm like, yeah, well, they speak different languages. You know? And he was like, but how does that happen? How do you understand? And like, we get by. You know,
you still, you pick a word here and there and you put it all together. But yes, you sit in a group with people speaking five different languages and everyone knows what everyone's saying.
You know, that's
the beauty of our country.
That's more authentic, I think, than trying to make. Although I've seen sometimes it's really weird to have people speaking two different languages on screen.
Yeah.
And yet they're talking to each other. It's just really weird.
Yeah.
I find that weird. I don't know how we can fix that, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, that, I think that's one of our least problems in terms of what's happening. And I mean, it's happening all around the world in terms of funding and governments not having enough funding and budgets being cut. And it's always our portion that's always taken away.
We aren't important.
Yeah,
we don't make the world go round.
Yeah,
we're a hobby.
How are we getting our stories out, and how are we going to? Because people say, well, I didn't get the 20 million funding, and the argument for that is that, well, then just do a guerrilla style. You know, if you want to tell your story, tell your story.
Tell your story. No, definitely. There is no hustler like an artist.
Yeah.
I think because we wouldn't do this if you weren't passionate. We wouldn't, you know. Nothing's going to make you get out of bed at 3 a.m. to catch that first shot before sunrise if you weren't passionate about it. And this last weekend proved that to me.
Yeah.
My friend said, brilliant director Zamom Kwanazi, said, I need to make this film. I need to make this film right now. I have no money. My friends help me.
Yeah.
We said, where do you need us to be and what time?
Yeah.
We shot a movie, six people, last weekend in KZN.
So you drove from here to KZN. Where did you guys stay, though?
We stayed in Port Edward, and all help from all friends in the interview. Robbie Thorpe's house helped us out. Beautiful house, by the way, Robbie. And it was just six friends, you know? And we had, I mean, everyone was getting promoted during the day. No, but now... Now you ate your D. Just do this one more thing. Yeah, you know, I think I was lead actress, I was makeup, I was stunts, I was unit. I mean, we're carrying stuff across the rocks. We had a piece of board with a skateboard, which was our track at some point to get that shot.
True, gorilla filmmaking.
I've never done anything like that before. It's always been everything perfectly set out and like, can someone bring me a cup of tea? And I was like, this is movie making. Yeah. This is what it's all about. I've never been so enthralled in my life. It was, we couldn't sleep because you had four different positions. So, so if you got 2 hours sleep a night, it was it was a miracle. But wow, I've never felt so alive. Never felt so alive.
Yeah. And what is the name of the film?
It's called Omnyama. It's inspired by Zanele Muholi's photo series called Somnyama Ngomnyama. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So to an extent it's a lesbian love story, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
Very art house, no dialogue. Images. I can't believe what we did.
Yeah.
And Zamo is a genius to even have conceptualized.
Yeah.
And thank you to Zanele for the inspiration, because those pictures, you can stare at them for hours.
Yeah, yeah.
They are amazing.
Well, I think we need to, let's plan some more. So what does she need help with? It says a post-production is always the biggest
thing. We need to finish this film. We need to finish this film. Everyone needs to see this movie. I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of everyone that worked on it.
Yeah.
And wow, like all I can say is wow.
Yeah.
She's a great director.
Yeah.
She's got a great vision.
Mm. Yeah. And she's also, you know what, I think the directors that tell the most amazing stories, and you touched on it, is that if you can relate to people, and the sounds weird, but there are a lot of people that don't know how to speak to people or understand feelings or understand people's emotions. What is your take on the different types of directors and the ones that actually do succeed?
I totally agree that the best directors for me are the ones who can tap into a character's essence, you know, because that's what people recognize. Yes, the pictures could be beautiful, but if the character doesn't kind of hook, or if people don't recognize a piece of themselves in that character, then I don't think the director's necessarily done their job. So yeah. I am a whole lot more in favor of directors who perform, who direct performance.
Yeah.
The DOP will figure out the lights. The gaffer will do what he needs to do or she needs to do. But I think if a director can really get to get a performer to bring out the essence in their character, then I think that's beautiful. And I kind of tried to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
It was our first time we allowed.
Yeah. No, of course.
We'll get there.
But I mean, Karen.
Sorry, I just want to go back to this whole thing around guerrilla filmmaking and funding.
Mm.
I'm as great as it is to be guerrilla filmmakers and be like, oh man, we did it.
Mm.
I really think it's kind of a travesty and really sad that some of the funding bodies in this country don't have faith in the film industry.
Yeah.
And without sounding like I'm complaining again, even though I am, is that trust this art. It is a phenomenal art. Invest in it because there are great returns. I was talking to somebody one time that if a country doesn't know itself and doesn't understand its essence, then it's definitely at the brink of some collapse.
Yeah.
And through the arts, people can understand themselves. And if people invest in film and break down the barriers to getting that funding, we can create some amazing work that can sell this country, that can reflect this country, that can heal this country, you know?
And I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly in what you're saying, and I believe in co-productions of other regions because it strengthens our relations and so forth. But also, I'm still part of the school that important stories and events, South Africans should be able to be at the forefront of this.
For sure.
You know, and over the years, people have said, you know, like Madiba, it's always an international person playing the role. And yes, Idris did a fantastic job and he's gorgeous to look at and so forth. But I just think that, you know, we have phenomenal actors within our region and the government need to
trust.
Believe. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
You know, what do we need to do? I mean, there aren't enough acting schools out there. But how do we get that message across for artists just to stand up and say, actually, no, we're not going to be in that film because it's supposed to be 60% international, 60% South African, but they're getting around loopholes. So, you know, the lead should be South African, but it's international playing. And people say, well, you know, you wouldn't have gotten this chance if they didn't have that international person playing that. But if you look at the history of the Australian film market and the Bollywood film market, yes, they started off small, but they started off within themselves. And that's why I never remember his name, but he played Wolverine. That's why he's become who he is
Jackman,
now.
Jackman.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at Hollywood, actually, the leading men in a lot of shows now are Australian or English.
Yeah.
They are actually dominating right now. And I think it is that self belief that they had from the start, which we don't. We do still look to Hollywood for acceptance in a lot of ways, you know? And the fact that when I was talking earlier about wanting an international career, that's essentially what it means, is doing those movies because you want to be known on an international level.
Mm.
So, I mean, I get a lot of people say to me, why don't you ever move to Hollywood? And I'm like, I don't need to move to Hollywood.
Mm.
This is where I live. I don't want to be a waitress. Let's start there.
Yeah.
if I didn't do it in my 20s, I'm not about to do it now.
Yeah.
And I don't think I need to. But yet at the same time, even though I may get a part in what might be a big movie internationally, the part isn't what I should be getting.
Yeah.
You know, like I actually recently auditioned for something and for the first time a director said to me, you are too overqualified for this part. I can't in good faith offer you this part.
Wow.
And this was Joe Wright, who did Pride and Prejudice, Atonement. Yeah. So they're busy shooting a series, and I auditioned for a much bigger part, and I got called for a much smaller part, and we had a really great chat. And he was like, "You've done so much, like, you can't. I can't." Wow. So I couldn't even be upset for not getting the part. That's the first time someone's ever said, like, you know, like, you've been in this industry for 15 years. You've paid your dues.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it told me.
Yeah.
You know, that I should raise the bar for myself as well a little higher.
Yeah.
That if I want to act in these movies, I've got to demand bigger parts.
Yeah.
But it will get there. And there are directors who believe that. Last year, I did a United Kingdom directed by Ama Asante.
Yeah.
My part was not that great. So the South African cast was me and Teripeto and Fusi Kunene, essentially.
Yeah.
The leads was David Oyelowo and Rosamund Pike. They were doing the Seretse Khama story.
Right.
So it's the same thing. You're saying a South African should have played that part. David's a great actor, but from that perspective, but from the world view, they're like, this is not going to sell unless we have someone we know. And my part initially wasn't a part either.
Yeah.
She said, you know, it was women ululating. That was it. That's all black women do in the portraits. There we are. She, as a black woman, was like, no, I'm a Guinean woman. Yes, I live in England, but I know these women had something to say.
Yeah.
So she gave my character something to say.
Yeah.
So even though it wasn't the biggest part, I'm the one who looks at this white woman and tells her, no, Chiki, you can't just come here and think you're going to be our queen. This is not how it works.
Yeah.
You know? And I love that she did that.
Yeah.
So even though it was maybe that one scene, it was an important scene, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that I got to tell that part of what we might have been thinking, you know?
Mm.
So slowly but surely we can get there. But yes, we need the bigger parts. They need to trust that we can do it, that we are talented enough, because we are. We have phenomenal actors in this country. You know, and we can tell any story that put in front of us.
Yeah.
Aren't people tired of seeing the world through Hollywood's eyes? Come
you
on.
Know, well, that's my argument also, you know. I mean, I think I wouldn't be so adamant about it if it was a Nigerian playing it. You know what I mean? Because we also need to start crossing over our borders.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, you mentioned before about having one Africa.
Yeah.
You know, and being proud of what we have and telling those stories. But from a producer and from a production point of view, is the that school of thought still the same? That we need to bring in that international in order for the film to succeed, or are producers going out getting proper budgets but doing it just the South African route?
I think it's more the former, really. The view that still prevails, as much as we would like it to be different, is that at the end of the day, this thing is about money.
Yeah.
And I've got to make sure that it yields returns, so I will make whatever decision I need to make in order to yield those returns.
Yeah.
Now, this is obviously in contradiction to what I was saying earlier. I'm just purely stating the business of it, not my opinion necessarily. But so at the end of the day, what you then decide is that, okay, what is the best way? Because what you're doing is you're going to somebody and you're saying, give me your money, trust me with your money, and I'll give you back a bit more than what you put in.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dominant narrative has been that certain things sell. Don Cheadle this week or yesterday put out, there was a story about him and about how he had to bring in Ewan McGregor as a performer in his Miles Davis film. And he said himself, he was like, until I got Ewan McGregor, quote unquote, a white guy, there was no way that this film was getting made. We all knew for years, like, gosh, when is he going to make this film already? There's even the Jimi Hendrix film. When are those two coming out?
Yeah.
But then Miles Ahead, I think that's what it's called, came out. Now Berlin. And he said it's because only once he got the white guy on there did suddenly the investors trust. Did they suddenly bring in the money? That's really sad.
Yeah. So sad. Yeah. And it's a true reality. You know, but we're coming to the end of the show. In terms of young filmmakers out there and specifically female filmmakers out there, what words of advice and inspiration can you give them?
I would tell them they do not even know how much they have inside them.
Yeah.
And they need to leap. And I can assure them from this ripe old age that I am now that if you leap, the universe will catch you. It always does. If you're doing things for the right reasons and you take that leap, you will always get caught. Don't let fear hold you back. Beautiful. I let it hold me back for so long. Mm. Don't let it. Like, be brave, kids. Be brave. Jump out there and follow your dreams. That's what I'll tell the young female filmmaker.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'd follow on that and say, like, on the other side of fear is the best you.
Mm.
And honestly, like, have no fear. Can I say fuck?
Yes.
Fuck fear. You know?
Fuck fear.
Beautiful. So trust yourself.
Yeah.
Your story is worth hearing.
Yeah.
And just go out and do the best that you can to actually get it made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to end off the show. Thank you so much, ladies. Before we go, is there anything that you're going to be working on that we can look out for you, for Abena, in the future? What movies do we need to look out for?
I mentioned The United Kingdom. That was my last acting gig. And Galoroho, which is going to be debuting in Cannes this year. I play a small part. That's in Zamor Mkhwanazi's movie.
Oh, so it's another Zamor film. Fantastic.
Yeah. Which he did with a director called Alejandro Fadel.
Yeah.
So those are my last two acting gigs.
Yeah.
Writing on Umlilo, all Umlilo.
Yeah,
Umlilo
go
fans.
Girl!
They
go
are
girl!
Busy
That's
shooting the
hear.
Third season right now. Yeah. I'm writing the fourth season, and please do watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Anything from your side, Mabatu? Besides, we're going to be pushing in terms of what the industry needs to do and get more money into South Africa, 100% funded South African films.
Yeah, there's that. Mm. But on my personal side, I'm just writing my own film right now. I'm finishing off a script.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, when it's ready, let me know and let's talk about it. And we're going to play out with another woman who just broke boundaries. She was just so way ahead of her time. We know the song. It's Brenda Fassie. Thanks so much for listening. Of course, if you want to send comments or things that you don't like, things that you do like, I'm on Facebook and Instagram under Rosie Mutena, and of course on Twitter under Princess RTM. It's been real. Thank you so much.
Pan African Connect on cliffcentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.